Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello? Oh, there it goes. Hey, guys. Yeah. I thought he said they were good when they lit up. Sorry for the dead air there. That was my bad. I'm in the director's chair. This is Megan Jenkins on Razor Riffs. And Keith and Alan are running a little late today, so they will be here. Don't worry, I'm not in charge of the computer the entire time. I am fortunately here with somebody else, so I don't have to talk to myself. His name is Jerry Bednob, and you might know him from The 40-Year-Old Virgin. That's what I mostly know him from. He does stand-up comedy. He's very funny. What else have you done, Jerry?
Oh, I've done over 30 movies. Zack and Miri, Make a Porno.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Walk Hard with John C. Reilly. And, God, my first movie, actually, was many years ago with Pauly Shaw, Encino Man.
Oh, what a great movie.
That
was your first one, you said?
Yeah, I think that was his first, too.
Oh, cool.
And Brendan Fraser, who wasn't a big star then. And actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, I worked with Brendan Fraser again in with Brooke Shields, a movie called Furry Vengeance. And that was a long gap. Meeting, and we had a lot of fun. But I've done Politics of Love. I've just at least 30 movies I've been in.
That's a bunch.
And yeah.
You must love doing it.
No.
Why not? I wasn't expecting that answer.
That's
yeah, you're funny. Yeah, that's why I see why you're funny. Yeah. I get it. They all told me.
I paid him to tell you that. I like it. Actually, I feel more comfortable doing stand-up comedy.
Uh-huh.
And because, as you know, I'm my own writer, director, producer on stand-up comedy. There's no cut and redo, and you know. So that's my comfort zone, is doing stand-up comedy. And because of stand-up comedy, I got to do what I'm doing in movies and TV right now. Because of that, stand-up comedy. And if when I first came to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
Originally, I'm from Trinidad in the Caribbean.
Awesome.
Trinidad, Tobago.
That's a big change from...
You
must miss
it. Hot climate.
Uh-huh.
Then I moved to Canada, Toronto. It's cold.
Uh-huh.
Stayed there for 15 years. I was a high school counselor in Toronto.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
How'd you like that?
I didn't.
Have you ever had a job you've liked?
What I'm doing
now. Oh, okay. Podcast guest.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Because after, no, it became boring after, you know, office.
Yeah.
I am not cut out to do office work.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the walls.
Yeah, I wouldn't like
it. I don't. And that, but there was no room for stand-up comedy when I started. In Toronto, there was no club. Comedy club, and I was never a comedian. I was maybe a funny guy, but I can't say I'm a comedian because I never perform in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
And just making people in the office laugh and friends laugh, it's a big mistake when people think that they're funny when they make friends laugh. And people in the office, you should be a comedian.
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a big different story when people pay money, they get dressed up.
Yeah.
And you come on to see a show, and you have to be very careful, and you have to have, I think, an original act.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Because you don't want to be on stage where somebody in the audience can predict what you're going to say and predict the joke and possibly heard it before.
Mm-hmm.
That won't work for long.
Yeah.
You say, I paid money to hear jokes that I already know.
Yeah. But doesn't it make them feel better about themselves? They're like, I'm as funny as that comedian up there.
Oh, well, that could be a problem.
Yeah, then you got a bunch of them.
Oh.
And you're waiting in line outside.
Because some comics get them involved.
Mm-hmm.
And like a comic would go on before I do, like the MC, and get the audience and talking back and forth. Now they think they're part of the act.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a no-no for me.
Yeah.
Because I remember not too long ago, a guy was at the club, the MC, and he's talking to this woman in the front seat, back, and she, she thinks, wow, she's like Joan Rivers or Phyllis Diller or whatever. She's pretty. And then I said, why is he doing that? He's making it really awful and uncomfortable for the other comics to follow, because she might think, no, she expects everybody to talk to her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was pissed off.
You can say pissed off.
And
I saw your eyes. You're like, oh no.
I
didn't
know. Oh, what's the restriction here?
You can say anything you want, yeah.
Because I remember saying that. I asked the owner once, I said, can I say shit in this club? He said, fuck no. I said, oh, okay.
So you didn't know what to do then?
No. So when I went on, the woman started talking to me. I said, ma'am, I don't want to be rude, but I have an act, and I really don't need help. And I had to put down the comic before me because he was wrong in getting them involved. I said, maybe the comic before me had no act, and he had to help. You had to help him. I don't need help.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could just shut the fuck up. And that's what she did. She was really mad,
mm-hmm.
and she just pouted all through the night, and she's right up front row, and so I just ignored her because I couldn't play to her. She thinks that I'm the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
and the guy before me was a nice guy,
mm-hmm.
and I sometimes ask the audience, I said, did you get dressed up tonight? People come here to hear somebody in the audience entertain you? And no.
Nice.
Oh, yes, I made that prayer. Huh. Because I know they didn't come for that.
That poor lady, she already felt bad, and then she gets booed by everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's not her fault.
It is her fault. I agree. She did bring it on herself.
Yeah, but no, but it's the comic's fault.
True. Yeah, because he didn't, yeah. Maybe she didn't know anybody.
No.
Yeah.
Could be her first time in the club, mm-hmm. and say, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I am part of the. I think this guy is so nice.
Yeah, she's a star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I talked to him after the show, and I said, what you did was wrong, and you can keep doing it. I can't tell you how to do your act, but if I am coming up, if you're bringing me up at any time, make sure and don't get involved, get people involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because they think they're part of the act, and they're not.
Yeah.
I have an act. Maybe you don't.
Yeah.
So that's how. But stand-up comedy, you know, people make, I know comics would say they're so-called a bomb on stage that nobody will have.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll come to me and say, younger comics, say, Jerry, I don't know, man. All my friends tell me I'm funny. And all my in the office, everybody say, boy, you should be a comedian. I say, well, your friends are wrong. I said, friends telling you you're funny, they don't know that you were coming to go on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You're funny in the office, you're funny, you know. And people always ask me, how do I know I could be that I'm funny? That's hard to say. The most important thing in comedy, stand-up comedy, is timing. Now, before I started doing stand-up comedy, I used to hear all the pros and greats like Milton Berle and Yola come on TV.
Mm-hmm.
They say, no, timing is much. To myself, I say, not really. Oh, a joke is a joke. But then I realized, the more I came into the business, now I know the timing, I would say, is about 80-85% of a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's an old saying, some people could tell a joke, some people can't. It's the same joke.
Mm-hmm.
But what made me think Timing is something you can't explain. It's like rhythm. You can't explain. You can't teach timing.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good analogy with rhythm. That's a really good analogy.
You have it or you don't.
Yeah.
But I didn't know my delivery and everything was different until over the years as a younger man in Trinidad, a friend would tell me a joke. I say, oh, that's really funny. And then when we meet in a party, I'll say, Harry, tell me that joke you told me. He said, no, you tell it. I said, well, it's your joke. He said, no, but you tell it better. And over the years, I've been hearing that. I said, what makes me tell it better? I don't know.
That's very introspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I realized eventually it's delivery and timing. Timing and delivery come together. And I said, oh, maybe I tell it because you tell it and I tell it, like, and you don't get a laugh. And I tell the same joke, word verbatim, but differently. Mm-hmm. And then you're after over the years, I say, you know, maybe there's something that I am kind of happy that I, and then people would ask me to MC a stranger, not people I know, but they're not my friends, at a wedding. Mm-hmm. They would say, I'm Jerry. Hey,
Keith Reza, everybody.
Did you get a note from your mother?
Hey, are you trying to kick me out of my seat right now? I'm the director. What are you doing? You just turned all
just
the buttons
on.
What
going,
does that mean?
Oh God,
I'm getting kicked out. All right.
No.
This is how it goes.
Oh, no.
Hold on, I'm just moving over to the other side of the table.
Well, so we could brief him on what we're talking about. We've just started, really. Brief him on how we started comedy and whatever.
I'm so sorry I'm late. There's an accident on the traffic.
Uh-huh. You know? Were you at fault?
Yeah, we're on the 405, and I missed the exit to pick up Alan Lee, who's parking the car. And there's a trap, like a tire blew out, like right in front of me. So we had to, like, go a different direction, and then we just had traffic. I was like, oh, great.
Where was this?
This was on the 405 right by Sunset.
Oh, because did you see a fire?
Yeah.
And would that have caused a backup?
Maybe, yeah. We went the opposite direction because I didn't want to cause the, you know, stay in the traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the opposite direction, I guess everyone else caught on that, so we were like, oh, great, you know?
But did you shout out, I have a show to do?
Yeah, I was like, why?
Get out, yeah.
I know. I apologize. I'm always very, very early. And
No, I am.
Yeah, you know.
There's no problem. Megan was doing a great job.
Yeah, we're...
Megan's awesome, man. She's my one of my trusty sidekicks.
Well, no, and then she told me she's a laugh track.
Oh, yeah, I said I was canned when we were in the elevator. I told him. He said, what do you do? I said, I'm just canned laughter.
Yeah, because...
that's what he hired me for.
Because Alan Lee, the trusty sidekick, he's very, very funny, no one hears his jokes. So I thought if we get a lady, she'll laugh, and then everyone will be like, oh, it's funny.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so...
Oh, she get a cue and say, laugh.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much, pretty much.
Laugh.
Yeah,
get out of my seat.
Well, you actually do that in the studios, you know that.
Yeah, on the sitcoms,
So really, it's
yeah.
Some shows I've seen and I've been in, and they don't laugh, and they'll say, okay, more laughter. And then you have to do the same line.
Yeah.
Over and over, and it's so funny after that.
How many times till it's not funny?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. You know, I'm actually writing a movie, and I don't mean to, like, put you on the spot. I actually finished it.
Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah. But I seriously wrote a role for you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the thing is, it's at a party, because when I saw 40-year-old virgin, when you said, go fuck a goat, I thought that was the funniest line in the world. You know what I mean?
It's most quoted now.
Yeah. So like, it's just, like, at a party, it's just, like, one line, you know, and you just... Yeah, you know, I just think it would be cool, you know, the guy, they'd be like, oh, the guy, you know, and then you'd be like, go fuck a goat to the person, you know?
Yeah,
I thought it would be funny. I don't know if I have to pay you rights for that line.
I'm willing. People, when you walk down the street, do they just yell that at you?
People yell over the line. When I do my stand-up comedy, people in the audience shout out lines from the 40 version that I can't remember doing.
Yeah.
Because most of it was improvised, my line.
I read that, yeah, yeah.
So I don't remember. I made up shit that I have never said before.
Yeah.
Because when they had a standard thing like Cincinnati Bow Tie and Dirty Science, those are the regular, legit.
Yeah.
And then I'm finished with that, and then Judd Apatow said, well, keep going. I said, what? He said, same, just say shit.
Yeah.
Whatever, and those are the things that I say, okay, so this is why I've said things that I've never said in my life before. Like, alligator fuck house, or like pussy juice cocktail, and double decker dildo. All these things just came to me to say stupid things.
I yeah. can't believe you've never said any of those
no,
things
No, I didn't,
before.
Never. I never heard about, you know, I had to think.
Do one okay. more, one more.
Yeah, so wait, you never even heard of these things? You just
no.
said? Holy Lord, that's hilarious.
Well, no, I never said those before because I know Dirty Sanchez, Cincinnati Bow Tie and whatever. Like one of the lines was written as anal sex. So I thought on my own quickly, why don't I say something that's too generic?
Yeah.
So I say butthole pleasures.
Right.
So to me, they say, yeah, that's better. So, I never said those lines before in my life. So a lady was saying before, I'm on the shout out, I was doing a show, and I still didn't know. She said, you said it in the 40-year-old book. I said, oh, I'll take your word for it. Yeah. And then my comic said, yeah, you did say that. I said, oh. Okay, because I don't look at my movie. I only seen the movie once.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't look at it more than once.
Yeah, yeah.
Nothing I do.
Especially if you're in it. It's like you just want to see it. Yeah, I totally understand that. Because I did a movie a long time ago, and it was terrible. It was called Terrible People.
Yeah.
And I was at the premiere, and I played a bank robber who died.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I was just like, oh, my acting's just so terrible. I can't watch this shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's the thing, like, why I do stand-up, you know, because I'm like you know, you do stand-up to get in the movies, you know, but I don't want to act. Like, I'm like, what's acting?
Yeah, you're acting. Luckily, I play myself, like, my character, like, Judd Apatow know me, Judd Apatow.
From the stand-up days.
Stand-up.
Yeah.
And he knows what I am like off stage.
Yeah.
Because I just cuss, or I would get mad, and you see, that's my character, that's me.
Yeah.
So this is why he had booked me in a show called, a short-lived but very well-written show called Undeclared.
Cool. Well, I've seen that, Undeclared.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
It's a take-off, it's a graduation from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, okay.
So they went to college. I know it's Seth Rogen and Jay Baruchel.
Well, you're pretty close with Seth Rogen. You've done like two or three movies
with
him,
but we're not close.
Oh,
Do you know his...
Ask, what is the girl? I guess, oh, we play poker every week. Bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
I know we don't see each other.
This is the trusty sidekick, Alan Lee, Gary.
Really quick. I'm gonna take a picture of this and post
Jerry
this.
Jerry came all the way from Bangladesh, and he's not late.
They're dressed exactly alike. They're dressed exactly alike. I'm gonna take a picture.
They are dressed alike.
Yeah, check Twitter. You guys look. You need to go to the racetrack after this.
Yes, I know, but I have no money.
I have
no horse. Not even a horse.
Here, smile.
I have glasses.
Oh, this is amazing.
Oh,
yeah. $99.
My dollar store, I get my
drink. there's a really good friendship for me.
This man is a businessman.
No,
as well as an artist.
I had a laser. No, really. And then he said, well, you'll need a 175. Just go to dollar store 99 and pick up. I have about 8 pairs, one in each room. Or whatever. I go
That's
to
great.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
great.
And it's a dollar.
One in each room. Exactly.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
What strength is yours?
You know, mine, I'm so lucky, I'm at 125.
Okay.
I'm praying that I don't go to 190 next week.
Yeah, well, mine would start off at 135.
God.
I haven't changed it yet, and she said, so, you know, that's...
Fantastic. is this even on?
Yeah. You're on. Oh.
Thank you.
You're on.
Beautiful.
Alan Lee, welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
It's so good to see you. Everybody's
driving. I'm driving.
In.
Yeah.
When am I going to meet Alan?
Oh,
and then I came
this
and said, oh, do not mind. Not come off.
This is karma. This is karma.
Yeah.
People want to say, Don't try to get revenge.
Yeah.
Today, somebody, karma. I said karma is too fucking slow.
Yeah.
I'm going to speed it up.
Many lives, many lives.
That takes too long.
Now, do you, I'm sure you do, but I know, like, with comedy, you know, there's so many comedians and stuff. Do you remember a comedian named Stephen Briggs?
Wait a minute, I think I'll be working with him.
Yeah.
Did he tell you that?
Yeah, in a couple years.
Mesquite.
Yeah. Stephen Briggs is...
I've never met him, though.
Oh, really?
Stephen? You work with people and you still didn't know.
Yeah, well, because Stephen Briggs is one of my best friends, and he said that he featured for you in Huntington Beach.
Mm. Well, then we worked together.
Yeah, and he said...
But again, you really can.
Well, yeah, yeah, but so...
I'm old.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have an excuse.
Yeah. And I was like, Stephen, I need guests for the podcast. And he said to call you. I was like, do you think you'll do it? He's like, yeah, you're a great guy. And yeah.
I'm great, but, you know, yeah. I have nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Unemployed is different from great.
So
we're not paying you for this, you know.
You should give him a plane ticket to go for it.
So then I called Stephen and I said, you do the show. And then he's like, when am I going to do the show, you fucker? I was like,
yeah, well, it's good that you're good because he was supposed to drive.
Yeah.
But I called him, what's his name, Andrew Cohen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told him, my girlfriend is a teacher, and she retired. So now we're going to go together. So I told Andrew, I don't need a ride anymore.
Ah.
So I meet on Thursday night, on the 5th.
Yeah.
I think on the 4th we go up on a Thursday.
Yeah.
5th, and we work, and Saturday we come out. Yeah, so I was going to, that's how I know the name.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's just so many comics, you know, so, like, I mean, I'm not saying he was lying about working with you, you know, because he's an honest guy, but I know I've worked with so many people, I forget who I work with. You know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I work with him, and I forget.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're probably going to forget about this interview in a couple of weeks.
What did you do?
Sorry. I'm sure Keith will tweet at you and remind you.
Yeah. I just barked him for water and no... She
said,
you want to have a seat? I
said,
yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Man. So, but, here's a question I had that was very interesting because you.
Let me decide if it's interesting.
Oh, okay, okay. But you did stand up during the writer's strike at the Comedy Store, and you saw. Ooh. you did.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. But yeah. What the question is, the comic who killed himself.
Yes.
Steve.
Lipdekin.
Yeah.
I worked with him.
You worked with.
Before.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's amazing because like I'm very fascinated with. Because I think comedy has a dark side on people, and obviously that happened with Steve.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot
of very depressed people.
Yeah, really? But a lot of comics don't remember him, but don't remember his jokes. Like Argus Hamilton, he's one of my best friends. He doesn't remember Steve's jokes, and you said on podcasts you worked with him.
Yes, so I worked with him, but I don't remember. He didn't have jokes. He had nice stories.
Yeah, yeah. He was a storyteller.
Yeah, he's very bright, a good-looking guy, and everything.
Yeah.
And
there's no pictures of him on the internet, too. It's like,
well then.
Yeah.
There was when he died. It was that 1979.
Yeah, yeah. So he was good-looking for the 70s.
Yeah. No, he'd be like shit. He died in good time.
Yeah, yeah.
He died the right time.
Wow, that's quite a sight.
And he jumped from the Hyatt Hotel. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rock and Roll Hyatt, they used to call it.
That's what they call it.
Yes.
Yeah, because we work, and he was depressed. Wow. And then we're during the strike.
Yeah.
For money to get paid.
Yeah, yeah.
He never paid shit, right?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So I just came in 1978, and then. I ran into the strike. I said, I didn't come here for that. Because
yeah.
I wanted to work for free because that's the exposure. I leave Toronto to come.
Mm-hmm. You started at Yuck Yucks.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a good experience. Well, Yuck Yucks, that's a story how I started there.
Yeah.
It was only Jewish comics. Jews. All over.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And there was a lot of racial discrimination in Toronto against the Pakistanis.
Interesting.
There's a Paki Bash, they call them. Wow. Just beat them for no reason.
Wow.
But I'm not a Paki, I'm Indian heritage from Trinidad. Mm. So I took advantage of that situation. But they would watch me. So then Mark Breslin, the owner of the club, he had a one night, that's how it started. In a church basement on a Wednesday night, one night a week. That's how Yuck Yuck started. Now we have 25 clubs.
Yeah,
and I was one of the original with me and Maurice LaMarche, he lives here, and then the guy from Second City TV, Rick Moranis.
Oh, I love Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
You know Rick Moranis?
Oh, yeah.
That's Ghostbusters,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't mean to, like, brag, but, like,
he's
I'm the
like,
biggest Rick Moranis
so
fan.
No, I'm, me too.
Yeah, he's so quick. So.
And then he's so offbeat.
Yeah.
Because he, Howie Mandel's Jim Carrey, they came after. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then Rick Moranis never liked doing stand-up, but there was nothing else. He was on a radio show.
Yeah.
And there was nothing else, so he did play the guitar and do impressions of a ventriloquist guy, playing Ed Sullivan, and times like that, sketches he did.
I think I'm one of the only people who knows Rick Moranis did stand-up. A lot of people are like, no, he didn't. I was like, no, he did. I know he did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And
he
like,
never liked it.
He probably did.
He actually hates acting now, which is why he quit.
Yeah.
Interesting. When I hear that.
He's a country
so
singer
amazing,
now.
Amazing.
Yeah. He's a singer now. And what? His wife died.
Yeah.
And then we had to stay with his sons. And he quit business completely.
I'm like the biggest Rick Moranis fan. When I started the podcast, I wanted to interview him, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. they said no, and I was like, well,
how long have you been doing this then?
2 years.
He quit that long time.
Yeah, but so like I have this thing called Asperger's syndrome, mm-hmm. so like I keep asking until I get a no. You know what I mean? Like same with girls, I keep saying, hey, you want to go out? Say, want to go out? You want to go out? Unless they say no, you know what I mean? I still think there's a chance. So Rick Moranis is
no.
Rick Moranis's publicist just said keep writing us later. So I did, and then I wrote. I was like, look, I don't have much money, but I'll give you $500.
Oh my god!
And then they said maybe.
That's funny.
So then I got.
Why didn't I get fucking $500?
Well, right. Well, this,
yeah. Why didn't you?
Well, hold on.
You get rejected by the best friends, right?
Well, hold on. So, like, I think Rick Moranis is one of the greatest comic minds. And then they said he does not want to talk about comedy. He just wants to talk about country singing.
Yeah.
I was like, I know nothing about country.
You haven't had a country singer.
I do.
Yeah.
I want to say strange, like a genius strange.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what he's a very I would like to see him sometime because
I would like to see him with you, man. We could go lunch.
I went and you're gonna buy him.
Yeah. There. Wherever.
You better say yes or no now, otherwise you're gonna get an invite every day for the rest of the week.
In Toronto, he tried LA, he tried for a few months. So I was coming to LA. He said, Jerry, my stuff. He said, hate LA. I knew somebody that came, he said everybody's thousands of comics. I said, well, look, I already decided to come, and I got to take my chances.
Yeah.
And then when I went to the comedy store, I saw a bunch of people like Amateur Night or whatever. I said, you know, they're not a thousand comics; they're 1,000 people trying to be comics.
Yeah.
Because they were awful.
It's still the same thing.
Worse now.
It's way worse because now everyone thinks they're a comedian.
Oh, man.
It's like, holy. Like, I'm not a huge name, but when people ask me to open up for me, I'm like, do I know you? Like, you know, do you have any jokes? You know what I mean? And they don't have any jokes. And it's like, and then it's like, you want me to, like, nice guy.
People ask me this, I said, look, I don't go on the road, guys. I really need a road. I've never been a road comic ever.
Yeah.
I've never had a business card ever.
Yeah.
Because I say, you know, people who have business cards after a show, they're sort of like fucking sliming around to get a card. So I don't grasp it. Because people will feel obligated to ask you. If you really want to book me, I say call the club owner. Mm-hmm. And then if you do that, then I know you really want to do something with me.
Yeah.
But they feel in the fucking face, oh, I'll take a card.
Yeah.
You have no choice on me.
Yeah, and then it just goes in the trash.
Oh, yeah. Well, I take cards, people give a card, and if it's blank at the back, I keep it to write notes.
Yeah.
Really, if it's bow tie, I say, fuck you.
There you go.
Whenever people ask you to open up for them, you should just be like, go fuck a goat.
Oh, my.
When Joan Rivers took me to open Rivers.
Yeah, that was another.
She was the best.
Tell us.
A very, very nice.
Alan Lee's like the biggest Joan Rivers fan.
I've always found her fascinating.
Yes, she was.
Tell me.
When I did, when she had a TV show, The talk show.
Yeah, didn't you do like more time than you were supposed to?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, pal.
No. She made me do more time.
Yeah.
Because she had been panel.
Yeah.
And then she asked me at the end, you know, usually wrap up when you're talking to guests, oh, you're great. Would you come back? I said, no.
Oh.
And then she didn't know what to say because I did it as a joke.
Yeah.
Because I made sure I did well. Stand up first.
Sure.
And then I went to the panel. If I'd bombed, I'd say, fuck, I better say, yeah, I'll gladly. So she laughed. She said, oh, okay. She didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And then the second time I did, then she said, you know, Edgar, her husband, said, I'll be a...
Wow.
Who recommend me? The guy who owned Yuck Yuck, he booked the comics.
Yeah.
Joan called, he was in Toronto, and got a call.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a girl named Marjorie Gross. She used to work with Seinfeld and work on the show as a writer and a stand-up comic. And her aunt was a friend of Joan. And before Joan, yep, the show started, she talked, yep, to Joan and said, Joan, I have a niece who would like to be a comic. She said, yep, Joan, just send a tape. She sent this tape.
Yep.
She sent the tape was where Mark Breslin interviewing her. And she said, who's that guy interviewing? He's pretty sharp.
Yeah.
He said, well, he's the owner of the club. And he said, I'd like to have him to book my acts. And she just caught one day he was on stage.
Yeah.
In Yuck Yuck emceeing.
Uh-huh.
And the manager, the girl said, Mark, Joan Rivers on the phone for you. He said, yeah, tell Joan to suck my cock or whatever. Because he thinks, yeah, Joan Rivers, where did she know me to begin with? She had no idea. And then she came back and said, Mark, on stage with Mark, it is Joe. It is Joe. Get off. Go. And that's how he went. And he said, hello, and with Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Talked him into it to come and book. Yeah, he said, sure. But he had so much money. He came, he was making 80 grand a year doing that.
Yeah.
And he bought his Rolls Royce, rent a penthouse, and just to live in Hollywood for a while. And so he booked, he booked me. But what he did, you know, on my stand-up comedy, I talk about kicking handicap and
I know, I love that joke.
Yeah, just that.
Your stand-up comedy is kind of poetic in a way.
Well,
yeah, because, like, I don't know if you, like, write poetry, but your comedy, it seems like it's written with that same heart, you know what I mean?
Like just the rhythm.
Yeah, the rhythm.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful because, like, that's the type of comedy I like. You know what I mean?
It's dark and dry.
Yeah, I love dark. Yes. I love dark comedy. That's,
yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I could get a joke and then I would. But he told me to audition at improv.
Right.
And he's the producer, Joan Rivers, coming.
Yeah.
And say, Jerry, what you do? You do this joke. And I said, about kicking you. I said, I have 5 minutes. I can't do that kind of joke up front.
Huh.
Yeah, they have to know me and like me first when I do it at the end.
Yes.
Right.
About kicking a handicap. I can't do it up front.
He moved your joke.
They have to do it at the end.
He moved your joke.
Yeah, he did. I said, Mark, he said, look, do it, Jerry. I said, Mark, I'm telling you, you won't like me, you know. I know it.
That's funny.
And exactly, I did it the way he said, I'm going to get you on the show, I'm booking the show. I said, okay. Went on. Fucking died.
Yeah.
So I said, Mark, what did they say? He said, they said they hated you. I said, well, yes, they fucking hate you.
Oh my God.
He said, but I'll get you on the show. He said, I know you. And so,
did you tell him to fuck go?
Then he told me, Joan and the producer, he said, I knew Jerry.
Yeah.
He has always the material. I made him do that.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah, and I shouldn't do it. He has real good material.
Oh, yeah.
Out of clean and funny. So then he told me, get 5 minutes ready. Go and work it out. Now, another thing I never do, ever. I think I'm the only comic again who never does that. I never go in a club and try my material or TV spot. Never, ever.
Yeah.
Never.
That's interesting.
Because my thinking is, if I were to go, even when I did the Arsenio Hall show at the last minute, they called me.
Yeah.
About 2 days before, they said, are you working in the clubs? I said, no, I'm in Santa Barbara. I lied. Because they could come and check me out and change their mind.
Yeah.
So I said, no, you already booked me. I'm going to do it. The reason why I don't try it in a club the night before, whatever, anytime, because I'm going to try it, and if I bomb, I'll say, fuck, I'm doing this on TV tomorrow.
Yeah.
So that gets me in a very, very nervous.
Very good advice.
And because, you know, a TV audience is easier.
Yeah.
But this will be me, say, I tried this and I'm doing this show tomorrow, fuck. So I said, no, I trust my instinct.
That's excellent.
I get that, because when I did Stand Up for Diversity, they wanted me to really nail the 5 minutes, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I did the 5 minutes, I did clubs for maybe 3 months, because I was really trying to, you know?
Yeah.
And then when I did the show, I didn't do the stuff I practiced. And it worked way better, but I just felt like on camera, I was like, you know what, it wouldn't be good. I mean, I ended up losing the show, but I felt happier with my set, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and a lot of bookers don't know what funny is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a show called Will Schreiner Show years ago.
Right.
Will Schreiner's a comic himself, and his son was twin brother is a big on soap opera, Schreiner, Ken Schreiner. Uh-huh. So I'm going through the material with the producer guy. He said, no, I don't like this. I like it. I said, listen, let me tell you something. Those you don't like are my funniest jokes. And those you're choosing is not too good. It's kind of weak. He said, no, but I want you to do this. I said, I beg to differ. I don't want you to fuck up here, but you know. Can I bring a tape for you? He said, why? I said, I just want to show you something. So all the jokes on the paper, in the tape.
Yeah.
And all the ones that I like did really well with the audience.
Yeah.
And the ones he chose didn't. He said, Jerry, you're right. Okay, just do what you want.
I'm telling you.
They don't know.
They don't.
No.
A joke on paper is different from when you're actually delivering.
Totally.
And the funny thing is the bookers usually make more money than the comics.
Oh, by far.
It's like you don't even know what makes people laugh.
Yeah. Oh, no. Of course, they have a regular job to begin with.
Yeah.
And you get your how much? It's a shot, 800 or whatever they do now. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they have a step. And the thing is, some people don't like the chance. So when I work with Joan, she after the second show, she said, I think I'll take you on the road with me. So she took me to Caesar's Palace.
Nice.
And she and Nell Carter was the middle act, the singer, and I opened. And I was nervous. Caesar's Palace.
So huge.
That's a mecca.
Yeah, I love to
Amen. So when I was there now, Joan is such a sweetheart. She's so protective of the people she works with.
I got that impression of her.
Yes. So I'm going.
He says it's so sexy.
I'm not trying to be
keep
sexy.
Keep saying that, I'm going to blow you.
He's like, I got that impression.
And you were saying Joan.
And there's a guy, yes, I was. I told him Johnny. Sorry, thanks.
My God.
So Joan, a guy, a mafia, creepy soup, he said, you see that clock there? Mm-hmm. 20 minutes, not 1 minute more. Not 1 minute more. I said, fuck. My first night. I said, okay. Yeah. So I watched the clock. So I went on. I wanted to play the safe, thinking was the safe way. I did 18 minutes. Big mistake.
Oh, yeah, that's terrible.
Because the band playing on Nell Carter. And Nell Carter, that fat fuck, wasn't ready.
Oh, my God.
wasn't ready.
No, I know.
Yeah.
She's dead. So, and she said, Jamie, my friend, you still had 2 minutes. So then Joan heard what happened. And Joan said, what happened? I said, well, so-and-so, this guy, he said, you know what Joan said? Her words, fuck him. he said, you work for Joan Rosenberg. I pay you.
Yeah.
Fuck him, their union, they're not going to fuck up my show. You do as long as you want.
Nice.
Now, if you know me, that's all I needed. Clout.
There you go.
So the second show, he came to me now. Saying, I said, hey, don't fucking talk to me for the rest of the 2 weeks here. He said, what's your problem? I said, you're my fucking problem. If you want to ask me something, talk to Joan.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me for the rest of the 2 weeks, please. So I went on stage. I did 27 minutes just to piss him off.
Yeah.
Great.
Because I could hear in the back of the kitchen, Nell Carter laughing because she's waiting there. And I said, and he's looking at me and he's saying, just watching his time. And I said, Because I'm hungry, man. And since then, he didn't talk to me. And then I did my 20 minutes after that. But I just want to show him that you don't fuck with me because I have clout.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, you know what's weird is, like, in my opinion, and I'm sure you're agree. Yeah, yeah. But in my opinion, I think 20 minutes and 45 minutes are easy. I think 5 to 10 minutes are hard.
Exactly.
It's like, what the hell, man?
That's true.
Yeah.
I know great comics couldn't do, make me...
5 minutes. They can't do five.
Two.
Yeah.
In I won Star Search. Huh. International, right? I do quick jokes.
That's awesome.
The guy who did it with me, Ed McMahon, the guy who was Carlos Anzoraki, he does bits, you see.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to win because he has to go out and talk about his grandmother and do an impression. Like Bill Cosby, as great as he is, well, was.
I think he's the greatest comic. He's the most sinful man.
But
he had some problems.
He couldn't do Star Search and win.
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
By the time he finished, great storytellers can't do Star Search.
Well, so you want...
2 minutes. Yeah. 1.5 minutes, they
don't do. Laughs are coming.
Yeah.
One of my best friends is Norm MacDonald.
Oh, he's a nice guy.
I love Norm.
His style.
And he made the finals on Star Search, and he lost to this man called Bushman. And I was like, how do you lose to that? Because, like, Bushman has no career now. All he does is scare people on the streets in San Francisco for money.
Oh.
And Norm was like, well, because he's not that type of comic. He's not,
right.
You know what I mean? He gets warmed up with 10 minutes.
Yes.
After 10 minutes, it's a beauty.
Beauty, yeah, that's right.
You know, and that's the same stuff.
Norm is not, yeah, that's right. Because the first person to win it was Brad Garrett.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he had jokes, good jokes.
Yeah.
Sinbad did a lot of winning to Sinbad.
Sinbad won?
No.
I thought he made the final.
He didn't. Who beat him was a guy who, from Toronto to our impressionist guy, he beat Sinbad. Geechee guy. He won a lot of segments.
Yeah.
He won the most, I think, without winning.
Yeah.
But he has jokes, too.
I thought Drake Sather was one of the ones that came in without winning.
Yeah, I can't remember. I know who he is.
Yeah.
Dennis Miller did it.
Dennis Miller was awesome, too.
It's a different style. 2 minutes. They cut mine down to a minute and a half.
Yeah.
They didn't do the whole 2 minutes. That's the whole, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, just, but I knew when he went on, Carlos, I said, I think I'm going to win because he had to wait long to get one laugh.
Yeah,
it's funny, but he has to, he's doing a little bit. I'm doing quick jokes.
Now, Jerry, we actually have Twitter questions. I know Megan asked you some, but these ones I got in the car.
I haven't asked him any
questions.
Oh, yeah,
save those for you. I know they're your favorite.
Go on.
Oh. Well, we only have 5 minutes, but here's a.
I know I'm dropping the ball.
Yeah.
I can barely turn the microphones on.
Here's the Twitter question that I have that I think is really appropriate since we're talking about this humor. Jerry, what's your favorite dark joke, and can you tell it on air?
Well, it's up to you if I can tell it.
Yeah, man.
Well, please do.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Okay? I don't care.
I have a lot of joke. this guy went on agent and with an apple.
Uh-huh.
And the agent said, what's this apple for? He said, this is a special apple. This, if you bite it, but before you bite it, just pretend what kind of fruit you want it to taste like. The guy said, are you sure? He said, yeah. He said, you got to bite it. He said, what do you want it to taste like? He said, well, I want it just like a banana. He said, bite it. Oh, taste like a banana. Wow. He said, and he said, so you see? He said, well, I'll tell you. I don't know if I could represent you with just that. If you could make an apple taste like a pussy, he said, a pussy? He said, well, yeah, I could do that, but it'll take about a couple of weeks to get that done. He said, I don't care. He said, get it done and bring it back. 2 weeks after he came up with the apple, he said, I'm here now, so he said, no, this tastes like a pussy. He said, guaranteed. He packed the apple and said, this is like shit. He said, no, turn it around.
Oh, that was dark.
That's a joke.
You want a real sick joke?
Yeah, we'll do one more.
That was very good.
We just got the light, which is weird.
We're having our own show.
I don't know if you could talk
don't,
that.
Don't
that
tell us.
This is disgusting, I mean, sick.
Okay, disgusting?
Yes.
So is it more disgusting or more dark?
Well, let's hear it.
Well,
if we have
disgusting
a
and a combo. Good combo.
Okay, I'll take a combo. I'll try a combo.
Okay, should I tell you? No, okay, I won't tell you. I will tell you a better joke.
You want to tell me off air?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Oh, yeah, because I like that.
This woman sitting on a bar, taking a glass of champagne, drinking the champagne. A farmer walks in at the bar and orders champagne. And the woman said, what a coincidence. You drinking champagne and I'm drinking champagne. Are you celebrating something? The farmer said, yeah, actually. My chicken couldn't lay eggs for the longest time. And this morning I got up a dozen eggs. She said, what a coincidence. My husband and I were trying to get me pregnant for 6 years now. Nothing. Yesterday the doctor told me I'm pregnant. What a coincidence. Yeah. And she said, what did you do so the chicken could have it? He said, well, I used a different cock. He said, what a coincidence. I said, well... Oh, is that Ken after the fuck of me?
This is very real.
Oh, that's good.
That's awesome.
I like that.
Oh, my God.
But no, you want to hear my favorite dark joke?
Yes.
Yeah, and then we'll close on this. This one, it's not really funny, but it's in the news. You know what I mean? A couple years ago, this family went to Mexico, and they lost their child named Alex. He's like 6 or 7, you know. And you know how there's this whole drug war going on, you know what I mean? So what happened was Alex was like 5 or 6. He's playing with his little yo-yo or whatever, and he sees a churro man, and the churros man is like, hey, Alex, you like churros? I don't know how he knew his name, but he did. And Alex is like, yeah, I do. So the churro man's like, I got a whole fucking van full of churros if you want some churros. And the guy's like, cool. So the man, like, Alex gets in the van, and the man drives away, right? Now, what happens is a couple days later, the parents are like, oh, my God, where's Alex? And we got to get back to the United States because work, visa, divorce attorneys, stuff like that. So they're about to get back to the States, and they're like, where's Alex? You know? And they see a little Mexican guy carrying a little boy. And the mom's like, stop, that's my son. That's Alex. And she gets out of the car, and she runs. The Mexican guy, he gets like, scared, you know, so he throws Alex in the air, and he runs, you know. And the mom comes to Alex, and Alex is, you know, he's dead, you know what I mean? They killed him. And they took out all his liver and, you know, his blood and stuff, and they stuffed him with drugs, you know, like needles, cocaine, heroin, drugs, you name it. And the mom was sad, and she was crying, and I don't know why. She got a lifetime supply of free drugs.
Oh, ho, ho.
Yikes.
Oh. That's not nice.
That's dark.
Yes, it is.
Of course.
You were correct on that.
That's a movie waiting to be made.
Let's end it on your dark joke.
It's too late. You already did that.
You go to high school graduate. Say, Dad, can you lend me your car to go to the prom? You say, the dad say, well, I'll tell you, you'll have to hand up something. He said, Dad, what? He said, well, you have to give me a blowjob. Dad! I mean, daddy said, well, if I want the car, you're going to learn this when you grow up, you might as well start with me. You got to give me a blowjob. She said, oh, I can't give you a blowjob, Dad. Just to borrow your car for one night. He said, that's it. Yes or no, that's up to you. She said, no, the prom is coming up the same day and the night. What's the thing? I've got to have that car, God. She said, you know what, I've got to give in. I'll give in. He said, Dad, I'll give you a blowjob. Say, you're going to go for the car? He said, yeah, I'll go. Sip it down. And she started to blow him in. He said, Dad, it's just like shit. He said, oh, I forgot to tell you, your brother borrowed the car this morning.
That's not nice.
Well, I give it a fucking too much nice and not nice.
That's funny.
That's awesome. Well, we're out of time, man. But man, Jerry, thanks so much for doing the show, pal.
Thank you so much.
It was fun.
Would you plug something? Anything? What are you doing? You're going home?
Oh yeah.
Anything?
Well, I'm plugging you with your buddy. Well, actually, I have some things I had. Well, Paid in Full is a movie we just did. It's on Facebook. It's premiering on the 26th of September.
September 26th.
And then I did Late in America. It's another one I just did in Detroit. And the Joneses, Almost American in Albuquerque. All these I just did.
Yeah.
Coming up there. And then I'm working with your buddy. I'm in Mesquite, Casablanca. Ice House. On Thursday.
Ice House?
Yeah.
Let's go on Ice House, Alan Lee.
There's a special show. Only ten minutes. There's a good friend of mine named Leslie Norris. She's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
15, 20 years, haven't they? She's doing a girls' thing, a contest for 3 minutes each, but she wants to ask me and Jimmy Brogan and somebody doing 10 minutes. But it's not like a show.
Yeah.
You'll have to wait till I'm doing a real show.
Okay. Yeah.
In 10 minutes. Clean material.
I hate to interrupt, but the director's getting really upset. So
the guy with the black suit is bothering us, and we don't have
time. All right, well, Ice House, and I would love to have you back so we have more time because I love your humor, man.
Okay. If you could pay me the money, you'll give me Rick Moranis.
Yes, we'll bring Rick.
Well, let's talk after the show,
bring
guys.
Some churros.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Join us next week. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Bye.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.